You might have thought it would never happen, but Switchcast is endorsing a transport company. Whether you're moving a rare collectible, a high-end sports car, or your personal luxury vehicle, Shaughnessy Overland Express delivers with precision, privacy, and respect. This isn't just transport, it's white glove care from pickup to delivery. For over 14 years, they've earned the trust of collectors, enthusiasts, dealers, and owners by offering unmatched service and personalized attention. You'll work directly with their experienced in-house team, ensuring a smooth and private experience without middlemen or surprises. Every shipment is protected with up to $3 million in cargo insurance, offering peace of mind for even the most valuable and rare vehicles on the road. In addition to their enclosed fleet, they've also established a trusted auto transport brokerage service, giving you access to a nationwide network of vetted open and enclosed carriers. Whether you need transport on a route they don't currently operate or their carriers are at full capacity when your schedule demands, they'll still get it done without compromising the Shaughnessy standard of excellence. Same professionalism, same personal touch, expanded flexibility. We are proud at Switchcast to endorse Shaughnessy Overland Express as the official transporter of Switchcast. Visit soexinc.com and tell them Switchcast sent you. Welcome to Switchcast Season 6. I'm your host, Doug Tabbitt, here with my co-host, Tyler Sanders, and our producer extraordinaire, Ethan Huffnagel. Some say that revenge is a dish best served cold. I was going to say, some say that our podcast sucks. Well, we disagree.
They would be right occasionally, but not all the time. It's usually my fault.
Yes. Anyway, so we believe that... The news is also a dish best served cold. We've said this before. We'll say it again. We serve your news late with extra context and extra sauce. That's snark sauce. Once again, update for our patrons. We appreciate you. And if you'd like to support us, patreon.com/switchcast or Sean Connery checking in again here, switchcast.live/patreon.
Yes, Doug.
I came up with a joke during our intermission.
You did?
Which,
let's hear it.
If you're not on Patreon, you would not be privy to our intermission, but we have lots of fun. And I said, what happens when the Blues Brothers take a break?
What happens, Doug?
It's an intermission from God. Okay. Let's see. We got a gift from a listener.
We did. Ooh, people like us.
Another one, Ed Krakowiak, who sent us a couple other things. Our sign that's displayed with one of the best quotes ever that's attributed to me but isn't my quote and lives on our podcast table. Let's see here.
Was it Wayne Gretzky, Doug Tabbitt, or Doug Tabbitt, Wayne Gretzky?
Which way? Wayne Gretzky, Michael Scott, Doug Tabbitt.
There you go. He really hasn't even opened it yet.
Yeah, no, there's a lot of tape on here, so I'm expecting Tyler to vamp while we open this
vamping
gift from a listener.
Look, I just appreciate that if you're sending us something, you
make
sure.
This is natural wood.
I was supposed to vamp.
He's let the man vamp.
Can't even let me vamp on his own show. What do we got, Doug?
My show is like, oh, what? It's a plate to sample sign made out of plates.
You're joking.
Oh, my God. That is amazing.
Yeah. Hey, join the Patreon if you want to see it.
Ethan, you dog. That's amazing.
Oh, man. Shoot. We don't have a space for this immediately for the video, but we'll just put it in front of the Ferrari for now.
That is so good. What a treat.
No, just it looks like late to sample because I had to lean it up.
That's so good. No, late to sample was me this week. That's fine. I'll be better next time.
That is so good.
Oh, my gosh. When you're tardy for a wine tasting, you're late to sample. Oh, my goodness. In the news this week, the longest kick in NFL history, a 70-yard field goal has been made just recently.
Doug, this is a car podcast.
Yes.
What the heck does that have to do with cars?
Well, it was made the kickers on the Jacksonville Jaguars, and it's okay. Just Jaguar, the automotive manufacturer isn't doing anything good. So I was like, well, these Jaguars are doing something cool. So,
you know, I gotcha.
Yeah. Cause Jaguar's CEO recently resigned after 35 years at the company and just 3 as CEO. So talk about kind of like abandoning a sinking ship.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Interesting. Interesting.
Ethan, we're going to have to, clear Doug's warm-up lap comments. This is, we're getting off the rails over here. Also, what are you drinking, cereal milk? What is that?
It's kefir. Yeah. It's probiotic dairy things.
That sounds horrific for my old tummy. So that's, I'm going to keep drinking whiskey.
Yeah.
And you can be healthy. I will be happy.
Okay. All right. We've talked a lot about multi-platform relists. Still the warm-up lap. We've talked a lot about multi-platform relists. We got code here, baseball signs.
Ethan's doesn't like, work. This content's so good. There's no way it's just the warm-up lap. That's how much we love you, audio listeners.
All right. And or relists on Bring a Trailer and whether or not they work. We've got a few auction results to unpack here. So the first one is a heavily modified Porsche 996 GT3 that bid to $64,000 July 17th on Bring a Trailer. Now, Tyler, take us through the quick rundown of all the things that were wrong with this car and its presentation.
It's a pile of trash, ladies and gents. It is red that's been wrapped red for some reason. Somebody self-tappered screws onto
you got pause on that one again. It's Guards red, and what is the vinyl wrap color?
I'm pretty sure it's Guards red. I don't know. It's red. So
talk about trying to hide something. It's not even a color change.
But then they used self-tapping screws to screw on a horrific front splitter. The interior was entirely gutted at some point, and then they put in a Boxster interior instead. And what I mean by Boxster interior is the door cards, I think the seats, and there's no headliner. There's like barely any carpet. There's holes punched in the dash.
The headliner's in, but they just like stuck it in. It's sagging.
It's awful. All of the holes that were drilled into the dash for something, they took a roll cage out of it. This will never be a street car again. Don't know why. No air conditioning. It's no like hood latch or release. It's all just pins on the deck lid and the frunk.
They tried to quickie put it back to a street car instead of just selling it for what it is, which is a race car.
It is a pile of crap if it's a street car. And probably a great track toy.
The comments were crazy too, because a lot of previous owners chimed in, and people were asking questions about the welds that didn't look factory. And somebody's like, "Yeah, I didn't know of any crash damage." And then the next comment was, "Oh, it was wrecked 3 times when I owned it on track." So it's just,
and the sellers are like, "Oh, this is a great piece of our collection. Somebody's going to get a great car." And I'm like, "Can you just like acknowledge this for what it is?"
They brag those ceramic coated.
Yes, top of the wrap.
The wrap over hiding the paint was ceramic coated to make it look so good. Anyway,
it bid to 65 on Bring a Trailer. No sale, no hit reserve. So they put this bad boy on P car market
like a week later.
They did nothing to the car. It was like the same photos, slapped it up here. And boy, howdy, Doug, it went to 37 grand.
Oh, but they did get offers after the auction up to 49. So not a great relist.
I did see it's no longer on the page now that they were asking 55 on Deal Tank.
Yes. It went from 60 to 55, which is highly suspect that the bids on Bring a Trailer to 64 were legitimate. Something doesn't smell right here.
And besides
the car,
I don't have proof of this, but the high bidder on Bring a Trailer edited their comment after it was posted because they had a somewhat sassy response and then it got edited to a just, well, I'll get them next time. But they essentially alluded to the fact that like, wow, I thought my offer was exceptionally strong and like very shocked. And so I posted this on Renlist in the GT3 Cars for Sale thread, and everybody was just eviscerating the car, which felt good.
Right. So that didn't go so well, but another relist did. There is a 2006 Aston Martin DB9 Volante in almond green, six-speed manual.
Ooh.
And boy, the first two auctions did not go well. In 2024, it was listed twice on Bring a Trailer bid to $50,000 and to $60,000, which is low-ish for a DB9 six-speed manual. And it was relisted again this year, mostly the same photos. Really not much fundamentally changed in the auction other than... Oh, yes. Well, they added like 400 photos. So there's 600 photos, but only 100 of them are good. They're just like taken from so far away that you're like, is that a car? Is that what's trying to going be on? Artsy, but with an iPhone.
Man, almond green is so pretty.
Yes. They relisted it no reserve this time, which the auction houses always tell you to do because it'll get better results. But boy, is it a gamble. And it paid off this time because it sold for $81,500.
Whoa!
So 30% increase.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Now, it has been, what, like 8 months since it was last listed? So the different, you know, we're in a different market, I guess. But
maybe.
That's huge.
Not many 6-speed DB9s, like, and everybody remembers the car. So, yeah, I guess in this case, it worked. You can't say, well, they serviced it or put better photos up. They just did it again and said it is selling. So that got the bidders out. Wouldn't always advise that tactic. I've been burned pretty good on some no reserve auctions, but there's sometimes something to be said for it. And the last auction we wanted to take a look at is this odd one. Everybody's doing stick shift conversions. Well, somebody did the opposite. And on Bring a Trailer last month, there was a Viper SRT10 Roadster automatic conversion.
Doug, when you first sent this to me, I admit I was a little bit of an elitist. I thought this was dumb. But after reflecting and being a mature adult, I dig that somebody was able to do this for themselves who either couldn't drive manual for whatever reason or didn't want to learn, and they could still enjoy a Viper.
Yeah.
So, heck yeah, hopefully the next person will keep it as is because they also want to drive a Viper but are unable to drive stick.
Indeed, because they only made them in stick. So
yes.
It sold fairly well, actually. It sold for $41,000, which is pretty darn close to what a 6-speed manual one would go for. So it didn't hurt the value really much at all. Soul and Spine wants everyone to have a higher quality of life. They specialize in non-surgical options for those who have been told that they need injections or surgery. They offer state-of-the-art techniques that help over 90% of patients become pain-free in just weeks. Starting with thorough medical history and comprehensive examination, you'll work one-on-one with Dr. Hoover to meet all your treatment goals. Their mission is to unleash your body's own healing potential to avoid drugs and surgery. Visit SolonSpine.com to learn more, located in Solon, Ohio. Well, once again, we're fully warmed up, and that brings us to this doozy of a headline from the Chicago Sun-Times. Chicago Lamborghini dealer made millions selling to unauthorized customers.
Whoa.
At least according to the manufacturer.
That is a spicy headline.
Indeed. Indeed.
That's what? Okay. Tell me more, Doug.
Okay. Well, Lamborghini sued the dealership Gold Coast Exotic Imports, which is based out of Chicago area, claiming that at least 32 transactions in 2023 appeared to be sales to non-retail customers in violation of a contract. One case, the dealer claimed to sell one car to a former pro athlete when in fact it went to a convicted crook who wasn't a retail customer.
So being a crook means you're not a retail customer?
No.
Okay. Well, tell me more. Okay.
Apparently in this case, he was.
Interesting.
Some real corny lines in this article that we won't use because I didn't come up with them.
Yeah, how's it being on the other side, Doug?
Anyway, Automobili Lamborghini America is claiming that they were misled by their dealer about some of the customers who bought cars from the dealer. And once again, one of the customers was a convicted criminal who was an unauthorized reseller, says the lawsuit.
So this maybe sounds like, well, I don't know. Continue.
that right there annoys me a little bit because I technically am an unauthorized reseller.
Doug.
I am not a Lamborghini dealer or a Porsche dealer or Ferrari dealer or anything like that. So if I buy a car from one of the franchise dealers and flip it for a profit
because I'm a
flipper, I would be an unauthorized reseller. But it's not illegal. I am just not authorized by the manufacturer to sell their cars new. Big deal.
Does this mean you're not a retail customer?
I could be. That's if I paid sales tax on it.
Yeah.
That's the only difference between a retail customer and a wholesale customer, because intent to resell has nothing to do with it, because every Porsche VIP customer on the planet intends to resell all their GT cars that they've done for the past 10 years since they instituted that program. So intent is murky, but apparently in this case, allegedly, Gold Coast Exotic Imports was boosting their numbers by selling to people who were then flipping the cars for profit, maybe exporting them, maybe selling them into different regions. And the manufacturers have very strict rules on in order to protect their franchises and their territories about where dealers can sell. They can't sell into other dealers' territories because they don't want to get them into competing price wars. They can't sell overseas because that messes up their global distribution. They can't sell to people who are known for selling overseas. Again, none of these things are illegal, but it just has to do with a franchise agreement between the manufacturer and the dealer itself. And this is why this is a civil lawsuit. But they're painting it as if these resellers and convicted criminals are kind of one and the same.
Yeah, well, all of the wording makes it very confusing, because it seems like in a lot of these articles that Lamborghini is suing because they sold cars to flippers, which isn't really what's going on.
Yes, it is what's going on. They are suing because they sold them to flippers.
Well, so there was something in these that says that it's because the dealership received $4 million in bonus money as a result of these sales.
Yes.
And that's like, that's the money that is causing the suit.
Correct.
Or because they falsely represented these sales to Lamborghini.
You're right. It's not the sale itself. You're correct. Because some manufacturers, some dealers can sell to brokers and resellers. Like, there's nothing legally prohibiting them from doing that.
Yes.
They can sell to whomever they want as long as it's within the law. They're not, you know, it's not laundering money and, you know, you follow the trail of where money comes from and cash payments and all that other stuff. But no, it's not illegal to sell to brokers, but there are, what you said, unit bonuses that get charged back to dealers if they find out that they've sold into regions that they're not allowed to sell to or sold to brokers. But once again, this article, and I think Lamborghini is trying to paint this dealer and flippers as being synonymous with bad people. One paragraph here says the vehicles were actually sold to quote brokers and quote resellers, including one who quote previously pleaded guilty in a criminal fraud case that involved selling luxury cars to drug dealers and pimps as a means of laundering money.
Oh my gosh.
So like, those kinds of things are, I mean, they're relevant, but it makes it sound like every broker and reseller is a money launderer. And a lot of them aren't. They're just non-factory authorized car dealers operating totally legally. But the manufacturer doesn't like it because they want to control their market and they want to have a good relationship and offer proper services to their retail clients. And when dealers looking to make a quick buck do things like this, it, in the manufacturer's opinion, hurts their brand. Now, there's also some other things alleged, Tyler, you mentioned about like payments on the side.
Yeah, the biggest thing I noticed is it seems like there were some incentives that Lamborghini was offering for sales. And I think there were stipulations on those incentives that the sales had to be of a certain type. And I think that's where the whole retail customer thing comes in. So the suit alleges that the dealership submitted and obtained these bonus payments, even though they didn't, they essentially lied when they were submitting the information to make it seem like it was the customers that Lamborghini wanted.
Right. But then I think there's another trick that dealers pull, and I don't think, I know that a lot of them do this. I don't know that this was the case with Gold Coast, but I've heard many stories of dealers doing this where they will do these backdoor deals where the sales manager, or owner, somebody will get cash payments or watches or whatever in exchange for doing deals with these resellers. Oftentimes when the dealers are required to sell the vehicles at MSRP, they go, well, they're going for a 50 or 100 grand over. So we want that profit, but we can't do it because the manufacturer will get us in trouble, but we can't sell it to a broker because we'll get in trouble. So they sell it to a retail customer who then a Rolex or something shows up at the sales manager's office, and then they get consigned back or resold. And it's just all these shadow games. So it would seem to be the case that maybe Gold Coast is double dipping here, where they're selling to these brokers and resellers thinking like, okay, we're getting payments on this side and we're getting the manufacturer spiffs because we're reporting these as retail sales. So
I will say this, there must be something going on, because if you go to Lamborghini Gold Coast and go to new inventory, there's nothing. They're only dealing in used cars at the moment.
Interesting.
So I think Lamborghini might not be sending them cars.
It's very possible. Very possible. I'm sure that is within their agreement to yes. not do. So I have an interesting story about Bentley Lamborghini Gold Coast. When I was much younger and just getting into the business, I went in there. I was on a trip with a bunch of people from church, and we were just walking around Chicago. I was like, oh, I'm going to go and look at cars. So I got talking with one of the salesmen, and he let me behind the ropes, and we're looking at Range Rovers and stuff. And we sat down at his desk, and the Range Rover Sport had just come out, and I was flipping those for a profit. And now Gold Coast prices were such that there was no way I was going to buy it from them and flip it for profit. They were marking them up at the time. But I was at least trying. I was negotiating. And the guy said, well, if we can get this deal done today, are you ready to pay? I'm like, no, I'm on a trip, but I'll leave you a deposit and wrap it up when I get back. And he goes, well, what kind of deposit? I said, $1,000. He goes, $1,000? What do you think you're buying, an effing bicycle?
Whoa.
I was like, it's pretty much the deposit I leave anywhere else on a Range Rover. So okay.
Wow.
Yep. So that was my experience with that. But I was an unauthorized reseller.
I know. They sniffed it out. I did look at their Google reviews, and I was surprised that people would leave negative reviews because they went to look at the dealer or look at the cars at the dealership, but they weren't intending to buy. Like, there were tourists that were just like, I want to see some cool cars. And they're like, these people were so rude to us. And I'm like, this is not what the business is for. Uh-huh. I can't believe you leave. You can be upset about it. You can be annoyed. Sure. But leaving a negative review when you went into a business and did not participate in the purpose of the business is wild.
It's not a museum.
Yeah. Wild.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why we don't have a showroom.
Yes.
We're nice to people that come, but there's a reason we don't have a showroom. We'd never get any work done. Oh, man, that brings us to our, I don't know if we solved anything there, but we shed some light on what's going on, and, you know, whatever. They're probably going to reach a settlement, and money will be exchanged, and they'll all move on. But that's an inside look at what's going on there. Shrewd negotiator, which is people trying so, so hard to buy or sell their wares, and usually trying a little too hard, and we like to make fun of them. Because we never do it ourselves. Never, ever guilty.
Not at once.
997 C4S for sale, a 2007, which is right in the range of IMS and bore scoring possible issues. But of course, it's a non-serviceable bearing on the 07. So it can be an issue, but it's not upgradable. And it's a lower percentage of failure than the old one. So a lot of people say it's not an issue. That's not true. Anyway, in his for sale listing, this is great. Quote, IMS bearing checked, and it is not an issue for the 07. I had this checked with a, all caps, licensed pro Porsche race car driver who won championships nationwide.
Is it like a mechanic championship, or are they talking about driving the cars?
It says race car driver.
Huh. Well, I don't think they might know some stuff. They could be very knowledgeable, but they were wrong.
The guy did go on to start his own Porsche shop. It did say this, but I'm like, that those are the wrong qualifications to be touting when you're saying something mechanical. Like, great, the guy can drive around a track fast. That doesn't mean he knows about IMS bearings. Anyway, so somewhat misleading there because he's trying to say that's not an issue. It's not much of an issue, but it's still an issue. But anyway, I don't want to hate on the listing too much. I just thought that was hilarious, especially all caps. But it is a great listing. Otherwise, the car is gorgeous. Meteor gray with Coco Sport seats, 19-inch optional wheels, low miles, stick, you know, wide body, everything you want. And the guy who posted for sale is actually Captain Positive because a lot of people were making fun of the price or whatever. Yeah. And at the end of his listing, he just said, please respect the post. And people would say whatever they wanted. And he's just like, thanks for the input. Thumbs up. I mean, just Captain Positive. I'm like, wow. We need more of this guy. And like, can you teach the Corvette guys how to sell their cars?
That is... I got to tell you, that's a pretty hot spec. I do love some Coco. You have converted me.
Yes.
I wish Coco was a 996 thing.
Yep. Speaking of Coco, I'm selling my 07 911, which I did not have checked by a licensed pro Porsche race car driver, but somebody messaged me simply, IMS question mark, to which I responded, yes, it has one.
Good job. They all do, actually, but don't think too hard. The Sheffield brand was recently revived by Jake Turkbus, an owner of an original Sheffield all-sport diver he received from his parents in 1970 when he was just 11, beginning his love of watches. As an adult, Jay used his extensive expertise in product development and marketing to revive the brand that started it all. He set out to develop watches with a high level of quality and specification at a value price. His first effort, and a successful one on July of 2023, was the debut of the Sheffield All-Sport Diver 1. It had the kind of build and movement that much more expensive watches use, and his debut price of $108 was equivalent to the $13 his parents paid in 1970. Since that debut, Sheffield has expanded to a wider range of automatics and chronos, many designed around vintage Sheffield dials of the 60s. The Sheffield well of clever and unique design remains his inspiration, as well as maintaining the goal of high quality, very affordable range of automatic and quartz watches. Sheffield watches, value on merit, not just price. I love mine, so get yours at sheffieldwatches.com and be sure to mention you found them on Switchcast.
Porsche corporate. Oh, it is not looking good for them this year. And we are referencing a couple articles in this discussion from SSO Report, which is one of my favorite kind of diamond in the rough journalistic websites. They cover corporate goings on within supercar and luxury car manufacturers and dive into the numbers and give us a real good look business-wise of what's going on and why. And it's extremely helpful, but
it's very sexy.
Yeah.
Corporate goings on.
Love those spreadsheets, Tyler.
Oh, I do. Oh.
We were making fun of Porsche Club of America last month for highlighting the Macan EV as their Porsche Parade 2026 poster vehicle. And somebody alleged in the comments that, well, this is because Porsche Corporate is a big sponsor of the Porsche Club of America, and they're trying to push their EVs and do this through things like the Porsche Parade, which are mostly, you know, diehard like Porsche enthusiasts, kind of their core loyal customer base.
And I think part of our argument is that the diehard Porsche enthusiast is not always the person who's going to be excited or really wanting to show off a new Macan EV.
Yes, but also this is not going to age well. It really isn't aging well for Porsche because their sales are down quite a lot. Porsche had record year after record year from essentially like 17, 18, 19, 20, even through COVID when they were complaining about supply chain issues. they kept delivering more cars than the previous year, even though, somehow we can't get cars, so we got to raise prices, and there's no cars on dealer lots. Well, weird, because you delivered like 20,000 more than you did last year.
So
and
what happened?
More than pre-COVID. So anyway, Porsche's sales peaked in 2023 at 330,000 cars delivered. In 2025, they are on track for 290,000. So that's a pretty significant decline.
Yes.
And this article essentially says there's two big blunders that Porsche has made internally that is causing this failure. A few, but two main ones. One of them is leaning very heavily on China. In 2021, according to this article, China represented 32% of Porsche's vehicles sold. It was their largest market. In 2023, it had dropped to 25%. And in 2024, they were down to 18% with sales of just 56,000 vehicles. And that line is still trending downwards. And this guy has a great quote. He says, quote, "The China trend of boom and then bust is a risk Porsche executives should have been well aware of and prepared for. It's very much the same well-documented trend most multinational consumer product companies have gone through in China over recent decades. The Chinese market is anything but a level, transparent playing field. As quickly as you are able to grow a business in China, they have the ability to take it away. Porsche's biggest mistake was getting addicted to the revenue and building out structure to support a business that was never going to last." And he makes a really good point that Ferrari, who, by the way, should be the model for all luxury car manufacturers to follow, because with all these small volume luxury car manufacturers just absolutely struggling, Ferrari is raking in profit year after year after year, and their stocks are great, and they know how to make money. Ferrari has a self-imposed China limit of 10% of sales because they get that game.
Which I think is fascinating, because that's nothing I ever really thought of, is imposing how many vehicles or how much of a product you would sell to a certain market for stability reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And you would think, now, I don't have a business degree, I don't pay attention to international economics and markets and supply and demand and whatnot, but I would have expected a company like Porsche, with the resources that they have, to be able to look into a crystal ball and be like, maybe we should take a bit of a slower approach and go for a long-term game rather than pumping in for this like exponential growth that at some point was only going to stop.
Their next big blunder is, of course, EVs, which we've been calling for a long time, with these manufacturers somewhat under pressure, of course, from impending EU regulations and or California emission regulations, leaning so heavily into EV development and EV sales. But unfortunately for them, the demand really is not there. And we covered this with Ferrari recently, where Ferrari just said, nope, we've essentially polled our customers. There's no demand, so we're going to push stuff back.
Yep.
Porsche didn't poll their customers, apparently, and
which
just
is
said
the same thing they did with the 991.1 GT3. They're like, nope, PDK only. Nobody wants that silly manual. And guess what they had to bring back?
The manual. Back in 2022, they went kind of all in on EVs. They wanted to be up to 80% EVs totally in 2030. 80% of Porsche's brand. Porsche, who used to, I don't know if they've ever only made the 911, but I'm sure there's some years you could find that was it. They made enthusiast cars. And I think all of us cried a little bit when they made the Cayenne, and they were like, it's kind of a cool sporty SUV. And then like everyone was doing them. And then they made the Panamera, and we cried mostly because it was ugly, but it's a sports sedan. And then they just snuck in, and all of a sudden it's like, wait a minute, it's Macans and Cayennes and Panameras and Taycans and now all these EVs. And then Porsche said, we're not going to make the Boxster Cayman line anymore. Sorry, 718 in internal combustion. Done. Canceled.
I was at a Porsche, a Cars and Coffee at a local Porsche dealer to us. And I love, one of my favorite things to do historically at this event is walk around the building and see what inventory they have stashed behind the, to make way for the Cars and Coffee crowd. I saw a gold 997 turbo cab, which was pretty sweet, and an absolutely clapped G-body Targa. Everything else, a Macan, a Cayenne, a Taycan, or a Panamera behind that building. Like, no 911s, nothing. It was just all of this stuff, which, like, they need to, you need to have a successful business in order to make the fun stuff. Totally get it, but it's a little depressing.
But maybe the fun stuff is their successful business and they're trying to grow too much into markets like China, thinking that gravy train will never end. And again, he pointed out the blunder of investing too heavily in something without a guarantee that it's going to be sustainable long term. Tech companies do this all the time.
Right? Oh, yes.
Let's hire 100,000 people. We only grew 20%, so we got to lay off half of them.
But you got to get that VC money, Doug.
Yes. So anyway, they bet heavily on EVs, wanted to be 80% pure EVs by 2030. Well, in 2024, just 12% of Porsche sales were in EVs, and the flagship EV, the Taycan, dropped by 49%. So it has definitely not taken the world by storm. It is more taken Porsche's stocks down. Yes.
Nice.
And he points out what we have is he says Porsche's core customers are highly engaged and enthusiastic group. So I think if they polled their customers, Porsche does some weird things. Oh, but they did. I forgot about this. They reintroduced, side note here, this is Porsche trying to be like Ferrari. In terms of like making lots of money off of options, they reintroduced their Pasha interior, which is the vintage checkered interior.
I like it.
So that will be available in the 2026 911. Do you want to know how much it costs?
$20,000.
Yeah, something like that. I'm getting there. Oof. It's exorbitant. Exorbitant.
Just for some interior fabric.
Well, it's on. Oh, you got to get the 911 Spirit 70. That's what it is. It's a limited edition ride, which is $242,000.
I thought you were saying it was going to be available on like production cars and stuff.
It is. It is also available as an option. That's what they're introducing it on. But then you can also add it as an option. And I'm guessing it's going to be five figures because heck, you got to pay $15,000 just to get a non-standard paint color. So Porsche's trying to milk their enthusiasts with stuff like crazy expensive Pasha interior when maybe they should be focused on just making cars that enthusiasts want.
So this made, there was a time in history that Porsche was really, really struggling before in the 90s. And we know their way out of that was to modify to a just-in-time manufacturing process at the, you know, that was kind of
the
bestowed
Boxster.
Upon
them. The Boxster was their way
Cayman,
out of it.
Or not the Cayman, good, the Cayenne. You know, they had a lot of, but I was wondering what was the source of their problems in the 90s? So I did a little bit of digging and research because I kind of knew like, well, they just didn't have a ton of money. So I found a good Substack that said that summarized it pretty well, that they had three main problems. A worldwide recession reduced sales in the luxury car market in the 90s. They had a lot of strategic missteps, such as introducing a lot of models that didn't really sell well, even though they were meant for a broader market, such as the 928. They also invested a bunch of money in the technology for that V8 engine that was never in anything else ever again. And then they had a very expensive production system.
And it wasn't that good to begin with.
No.
V8 engine.
So what's interesting is these reasons now that Porsche is struggling are not the same as they were in the 90s, but there's a lot of analogs. And the fix at that point was to introduce a new leader that dramatically changed how they did business and focused on the like core customers for Porsche.
Yeah.
So I hope I love Porsche. I always have. I know it's just a business, but I love the products they have created so far, and I want them to continue. And I hope that they can introduce someone or something, some driving mission statement for their organization that will turn this ship around and focus on what made them great versus focusing on what will make them the most money.
New leadership is an interesting point because right now they have essentially a part-time CEO because he's the CEO of Porsche and Volkswagen at the same time, which there's an old brilliant saying from my friend Fred Paluzzo that says, never half-ass two things, whole-ass one thing. So
there's not a lot of whole-assing going on at Porsche right now, I tell you what.
Yeah, right. And of course, there's some external challenges, like you mentioned, just in the 90s. I think it was Japan's market cratered, and that was driving the collector car market, and that dried up overnight. I mean, and collector cars tanked in value.
The ratio, the dollar valuation to the Deutschmark was also garbage, so it made the cars really expensive in the U.S. Garbage for us Americans. It made the cars really expensive, so nobody wanted to buy them.
Yeah, which is, that has changed somewhat, except now we have tariffs, and we have the reciprocal tariffs for the EU, which are up to 15%. They were 10% up until August 1st, and I believe U.S. is... or was the number two market for Porsche behind China. And I think we're number one now that China's market's declined. So tacking on 10 to 15% cost on all the vehicles you're sending into the US on top of the COVID inflation and at the same time, kind of this waning demand coming off of all that, you have these three economic factors going, well, prices have already gone up a bunch.
Yes.
And now we have the tariffs and the demand is waning a little bit at the same time. So Porsche has to overcome that. So kind of like the early 90s, they've got kind of a twofold external, internal challenge here. And they definitely need some good leadership to draw them out of this. So, you know, we love our Porsche cars. We've had a lot of them ourselves. It's sometimes a love-hate relationship, as it is with any great car. But I want to see them come out of this, for sure. I'd like them to continue making great cars for car enthusiasts. But I don't know, maybe they'll just be Macan EV company forever.
Ugh.
Sell refrigerators with warranties.
No, I'm sad.
This brings us to the props and the flops of the week.
As always, the props and flops are brought to you by Switch Cars. And Switch Cars is the enthusiast dealership where we buy, sell, and consign only cars that we like ourselves. Check out our handpicked inventory at switchcars.com and mention Switchcast for special pricing. Find more information online at switchcars.com and be sure to come visit our showroom in Twinsburg, Ohio. Doug, do we have a pick of the week?
We do. An update. I did double check it. The Porsche interior is approximately $13,000 for an option.
Ooh, boy.
Yeah.
Spicy.
Porsche sticking it to their enthusiasts. Okay. I think you could buy a 928, a whole 928 with Porsche interior for that price.
Yeah, but it won't run. And it won't,
Yeah. Okay. Pick of the week is a 2009 Porsche Boxster S, six-speed manual. Yeah, the car that saved Porsche. It's a post-IMS car. It's the 987.2. It's got factory sport seats. Not with Porsche interior, only 18,000 miles, and is a nice, right and tight little car. A lot of fun. Something Ethan could buy and enjoy.
Ethan.
Let's see. Our flop of the week. A lot of videos floating around of these parking lot curbs installed at a mall. Not where the parking goes, but in front of the stores where you drive. Instead of speed bumps, they put the parking curbs, and apparently the installer said he knew when he was doing it, like, this isn't what's supposed to go here, but it was what was on the RO, is what he was paid to do, so he put them in.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
This is like, oh God, like, it's okay to just ask the question, should I actually be doing this? Like,
yeah, but he might be union, so if he does it, he can get paid and then get paid double time to take them out and then paid again to put them back in.
I wonder how many people drove over these.
Oh, lots. There's videos of people just like 1 mile an hour, like, clunk.
That's
you need
insane.
Serious front axle lift to overcome
nope,
those things.
Absolutely not.
Yeah. Prop of the week. Another one from a video. Crazy quarter mile drag race. This Opel GT built as a drag car gets yeah. hit on the drag strip. The impact causes him to roll twice, bounce off the opposite side wall, but then lands upright facing the finish line, throttle down,
goes,
and he completes the quarter mile run faster than probably any car that any of us had in high school that we thought were fast. I think it was 13.8 seconds.
Oh, man.
Quarter mile after getting hit, rolling twice, bouncing off the wall.
Oh, amazing.
In it to win it.
Oh.
Pedal to the metal. Thank you for joining us for Switchcast with Doug Tabbitt and Tyler Sanders, produced by Ethan Huffnagel. Switchcast is an automotive entertainment and opinion show, and nothing we say should be taken very seriously. We do not give tax, investment, legal, emotional, or professional advice, and the only licenses we hold are driver's licenses. The opinions expressed on this show are exclusively held by the people pontificating at that moment and do not reflect the values of our producers or sponsors. Our theme music is provided by Emily and Ivory. You can stream their full album on Spotify or SoundCloud. If you like this show, you can stream it in its entirety on your favorite audio podcast platform. Check out switchcast.live for more info.